Spiritual work. The fact that an individual asks the Creator for spiritual perceptions, but does not ask Him to solve the various problems in our daily lives, indicates the weakness of our faith in the omnipotence and the omnipresence of the Creator. It also signifies our lack of understanding of the fact that all our problems are sent to us with one purpose only, so that we should try to resolve them ourselves, but at the same time would ask the Creator to help in resolving them, believing all the while that all these problems are sent to us in order to strengthen our faith in His oneness. If an individual truly believes that everything depends on the Creator, then he must turn to the Creator, but not in the hope that the Creator will solve them instead of him, but in order to use the problems as an opportunity to become dependent on the Creator. However, not to deceive oneself with respect to one's personal motives, an individual must at the same time be struggling with the problems on his own as all the others around him do. A spiritual decline is sent from above to allow subsequent spiritual growth. Since it's sent from above, it comes to an individual instantaneously, reveals itself in a flash, and thus almost always finds one unprepared. But the exit from that state, the spiritual ascent, occurs slowly, like healing from an illness, because the individual must fully grasp the condition of the decline and must attempt to overcome it himself. If during the state of spiritual ascent, one is able to analyze his own bad qualities, to join the left line with the right one, then that person manages to avoid many spiritual declines, leaping over them, as it were. But only those capable of keeping to the right line, that is, capable of justifying the actions of the Creator in spite of egotistical suffering, are able to stay the course and avoid spiritual declines. This is reminiscent of the rule outlined in the Bible concerning obligatory war, or milhemet mitzvah, and voluntary war, or milhemet reshut. The obligatory war against egoism and the voluntary war, if an individual is capable of and desires to exert personal effort. The internal work of an individual on himself, on his struggle to overcome egoism, on elevating the Creator above all else, on strengthening his faith in the Creator's domain, all these must be concealed by the individual, just like all other spiritual states that he passes through. Also, a person may not advise another with respect to the way that another person should act. If one does indeed notice the other person exhibiting signs of egoism, he must interpret these signs in relation to himself, since there's no one in the world other than the Creator. This implies that all that a person sees and feels is the direct result of the Creator desiring that these aspects be seen and felt by the person in question. All that surrounds a person was created solely for the purpose of inducing a realization in him of the necessity to constantly think of the Creator, to ask the Creator to change the material, the physical, the social, and other conditions of creation. Each person possesses an infinite number of deficiencies, all of which stem from our egoism, from the desire to be gratified and to attain comfort under any circumstances. The collection of admonitions, or musar, relates to the way in which one should struggle with each deficiency and scientifically explains its methods. The Kabbalah, even with respect to beginners, introduces people to the realm of the higher spiritual forces and allows each individual to understand the difference between himself and the spiritual objects. In this way, through oneself, one learns who he is and who he ought to become. Thus, the need for secular upbringing disappears altogether, especially in light of the fact that it does not yield the desired results. Witnessing in oneself the struggle between two forces, the egoistic and the spiritual, the individual gradually forces the body to desire a replacement of one's own nature with a spiritual one, of one's own qualities with those of the Creator, without the external pressure of one's mentors. Instead of correcting each of our faults, as is suggested by Musar, by the Musar system, Kabbalah suggests that the individual should correct his egoism as the source of all evil. The past, the present, and the future are all experienced by an individual in the present. In our world, all three are perceived in the present. but as three distinct sensations, which are produced as a result of our mind arranging these notions in accordance with its own internal time chart and thus yielding an impression of tense. In the language of Kabbalah, this is defined as the difference in effects of the light pleasure. The pleasure that is felt at a given moment is considered to be the present. If its internal, direct impact on us has already passed, if the pleasure's gone, gleams from afar, and is sensed by us as being distant, then the perception of past is created. If there's a cessation of light that emanates from the pleasure that left us, if it is no longer received by us, then we completely forget about its existence. But if it resumes radiating light from afar, then it becomes the forgotten past that was just remembered by us. If a certain light pleasure has never yet been experienced by us and suddenly appears to our senses from afar, it will be perceived by us as the future, or the light of confidence. In other words, the present is perceived by us as an internal acquisition, as light, as information, and as pleasure, whereas the past and the future are perceived as the result of the distant external glow of remembered or anticipated pleasure. But in any case, a person does not live either in the past or in the future, but only at the present moment, perceives the different types of light, which are interpreted as different time tenses. If an individual does not experience any pleasure in the present, he seeks the source that can give pleasure in the future. He awaits the next moment, which will bring with it different sensation. Our efforts in the sphere of self-improvement consist of drawing the distant external light into our present perceptions. There are two forces acting upon us. Suffering pushes us from behind, and pleasures entice us and pull us forward. Usually, one force alone is not sufficient. The mere anticipation of future pleasure is not enough to advance forward, since if one has to make an effort to progress, such factors as one's laziness or one's fear of losing what one already possesses at the present may come into play. For this reason, it's necessary to have a force that works from behind, the sense of suffering in the present state. All blunders stem from one ultimate blunder, the desire to partake of pleasure. Usually, the one who commits the blunder does not boast of the fact that he could not withstand the temptation, the fact that he was weaker than the enticement. Only the pleasure from anger awards one a sense of open pride, because it ascertains the righteousness of a person. It is this pride that immediately brings one down. Thus, anger is the most forceful expression of one's egoism. When one experiences material, bodily, or spiritual suffering, one should regret the fact that the Creator awarded one such a punishment. If one doesn't regret it, then it is not a punishment, since a punishment is a feeling of pain and regret from one's condition which one cannot overcome, whether it be health, material needs, etc. If one does not experience pain from one's condition, it means that one did not yet receive the punishment sent by the Creator. Since any punishment is the correction of one's soul, then by not experiencing it, one misses an opportunity for correction. But the one who experiences the punishment and is capable of praying to the Creator to alleviate the suffering undergoes an even greater self-improvement than would be possible if he had undergone the suffering without praying. The reason for this can be found in the fact that the Creator allots punishment to us for completely different reasons than the ones that induce the punishment in our world. Punishment is not given to us for acting contrary to His will, but in order to form a bond with Him, in order to force us to turn to Him and to come closer to Him. Thus, if an individual prays to the Creator to relieve him from suffering, it should not be interpreted as one asking the Creator for a chance to be relieved of self-improvement. Because a prayer, the forming of a bond with the Creator, is a step of incomparably greater progress than that allotted by the path of experiencing suffering. You are coerced to be born, coerced to live, and coerced to die. This is the way it happens in our world. But all that happens in our world is the result of the events that take place in the spiritual worlds. There is, however, no direct analogy or likeness between the two realms. Thus you are coerced, against the desires of the body, to be born spiritually, to receive your first spiritual sensations, implying the start of one's separation from one's own self, which the body never agrees to voluntarily. Having received from above the spiritual organs of action and perception, the vessels, or kelim, an individual begins to lead a spiritual existence and to understand his new world. But even in this state, one goes against the desire of the body to partake of the spiritual pleasures, and so you're coerced to live. Finally, you are coerced to die, implies that being forced to take part in our mundane everyday life, one perceives this as a spiritual death. In every generation, Kabbalists, through their efforts and books on Kabbalah, create better conditions for attaining the ultimate goal of coming closer to the Creator. If prior to the great Baal Shem Tov, only a handful could reach that goal, after him, as a result of his work, even simply prominent scholars of the Kabbalah could reach the ultimate goal as well. Furthermore, as a result of the work of Baal HaSulam, Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag, in this world, at the present time, each person desiring to grasp the goal of creation can do so. The path of the Kabbalah and the path of suffering differ by the fact that an individual travels on the path of suffering only until the point that he realizes that it is both faster and easier to take the path of the Kabbalah. The path of the Kabbalah consists of the process by which an individual remembers the suffering that he has already undergone and that may befall him again. Thus, there's no need to relive the same suffering again, because the recollection of it is sufficient to realize and to choose the right path of action. Wisdom lies in analyzing all that happens and realizing that the source of all our suffering is egoism. Thus, there is a need to act in such a way as to avoid entering the path of suffering from egoism. Moreover, having voluntarily rejected the use of egoism, to accept the ways of the Kabbalah. The Kabbalist feels that the entire world was created solely for his use, in order to aid him in reaching his goal. All the desires that the Kabbalist receives from those around him only help him to advance forward, because he immediately rejects the idea of using them for personal benefit. Seeing the negative in those around him, an individual believes that he sees the negative aspects because he himself is not yet free of these deficiencies, and as a result realizes that he's still in need of improvement. In this light, the entire world is created to serve the ascent of human beings because it allows them to observe their own deficiencies. Only by feeling the depths of one's own spiritual decline, along with the sense of the infinite distance from that which is ardently desired, can an individual grasp the miracle rendered by the Creator when he elevates the person from this world to himself into the spiritual world. What an immense present one has received from the Creator. Only from the depth of one's own condition can one fully appreciate such a gift and respond with true love and with desire for unity. It is impossible to obtain any kind of knowledge without making the effort to obtain it, which in turn gives rise to two consequences within an individual. A realization of the necessity of knowledge, which will be proportional to the effort made to acquire it, and the understanding that the onus is on the individual in question to acquire that knowledge. Thus, an effort brings forth two requisite conditions in a person: a desire in one's heart, and the thought or a mental readiness in one's mind to grasp and comprehend the new. For this reason, the effort of a person is essential. The individual is thus required to put forth an effort, and it is only this act that is truly dependent on the individual, for knowledge itself is granted from above, and the individual has no influence over its emergence. Notably, in the realm of acquiring spiritual knowledge and perception, an individual receives from above only that for which he asks, or in other words, for which that person is prepared internally. But when one asks the Creator to grant something, is not one using one's desires, one's own ego? Can such requests be answered by a spiritual elevation of a person by the Creator? Moreover, how can one ask for something that one has never experienced? If the individual asks to be rid of the egoism, the source of one's suffering, if one asks for spiritual qualities, even without knowing what they are prior to receiving them, the Creator will award that person the desired gift. If the Kabbalah centers only on the spiritual work of a person that takes place in the person's mind and heart, asserting that the spiritual progress of the person depends solely on these factors, then what is the relation between the observance of religious ritual and the goal of creation? Since all the commandments of the Bible are actually descriptions of the spiritual actions of a Kabbalist in the higher realms, then by observing them physically in our world, even though it has no impact on the spiritual worlds, an individual physically carries out the will of the Creator. Undoubtedly, the desire of the Creator is to spiritually elevate the creations to His own level. But the passing of the teaching from generation to generation, the cultivation of the soil from which a precious few great ones will rise, is only possible when the masses carry out a certain task. The above is reminiscent of our own world. In order for one great scholar to flourish, all the others are needed as well. The passing of knowledge from generation to generation necessitates the establishment of certain conditions, the founding of academic institutions in which the future great one will be reared and educated. Thus, everyone participates in his achievements, and therefore can later partake of the fruits of his labor. The Kabbalist, having received an upbringing, like his peers, in the environment of the mechanical observance of the commandments and of the simple faith in the Creator, continues his spiritual growth, whereas his peers remain on the initial level of spiritual development. Nonetheless, his peers, like the rest of humanity, unconsciously participate in the Kabbalist's work, and therefore unconsciously partake of a portion of his spiritual gains. Moreover, the subconscious parts of their spiritual qualities are also unconsciously corrected, thus allowing for the possibility that in several generations, the peers themselves will be capable of the conscious spiritual ascent. Even of the students who have come to study Kabbalah, some for general knowledge, others for spiritual ascent, it is said, 1,000 enter the school, but only one exits to teaching. Nevertheless, all participate in the success of the one, and all receive their own portion of correction through their participation. Having entered the spiritual realm, and having corrected his own egoistic qualities, the Kabbalist once again experiences the need for others. Living in our world, he collects the egotistical desires of others and corrects them, thus helping the rest to gain the ability to be engaged in conscious spiritual work sometime in the future. If an ordinary person can in any way aid the Kabbalist, even by performing purely mechanical tasks, he thereby allows the Kabbalist to include that person's personal desires in the correction that the Kabbalist effects. Hence it is said in the Talmud that serving a sage is more useful for a disciple than learning from him. The learning process entails egoism and employs our earthly reason, while the service of a sage originates in one's faith in the sage's greatness, a feeling that a student cannot perceive. Thus, the student's service is much closer in essence to the spiritual qualities and consequently is preferable for the disciple. Thus, one who is closer to his teacher and served him more gained a greater chance for spiritual ascent. Accordingly, it is said by the Kabbalist that the way of Kabbalah is not inherited, but rather passed down from teacher to disciple. So it was in all generations up to the present one. However, the present generation has fallen so low spiritually that even its leaders pass their knowledge via family lineage, since all their knowledge is on a bodily level. On the other hand, those who have formed a spiritual bond with the Creator and with the disciples transfer their legacy only to those who can receive it, that is, to their closest disciples. When an individual experiences obstacles in his advance towards the Creator, he must ask the following of the Creator. 1. That the Creator remove all the obstacles which he himself sends, so that the individual can overcome them by his own means and not be in need of greater spiritual strength than he already possesses. 2. That the Creator should grant him a greater desire for spiritual understanding and to impart on him the importance of spiritual ascent. Then the obstacles will not be able to stop that person on the path to the Creator. An individual is willing to give up everything in the world for his life if the life is valuable to him. For this reason, an individual must ask the Creator to grant him a taste of spiritual life so no obstacles will deter him. A spiritual desire implies a desire to give and to use the desire of pleasure only in order to please others. A desire to please oneself is absent from the spiritual realm. The material is diametrically opposite to the spiritual. But if there's no common ground, that is, no common qualities between the spiritual, or altruism, and the material, or egoism, then how can egoism be corrected? The spiritual light, which is able to transform egoism into altruism, cannot enter an egoistic desire. The reason the world does not perceive the Creator centers on the fact that the light of the Creator enters any object only to the degree that the qualities of the object correspond to the qualities of the light. Only the light of the Creator can change an egoistic vessel into a spiritual one by entering it. There's no other way. For this reason, a human being is created. First, to exit under the influence of the egotistical forces and to receive such qualities from them that will separate that being from the spiritual. Then, to come under the influence of the spiritual forces and gradually, while working on one's own spiritual center in the heart, with the help of the Kabbalah, to correct those desires that the human being received from the egotistical forces.